Well, the biggest 4 hours of the NBL 24 season is here. Semi-finals, game threes in Melbourne and in Perth. It is such an exciting prospect. The Hawks and United, Tassie and the Wildcats. It is going to be all on the line this evening. We'll jump into that with NBL champion Damon Lowry next. It is NBL Now. On this Wednesday, the 13th of March, it is semi-finals, game three. It's all on the line. And Damon Lowry, your Hawks are in action as I say a very good morning to you.
JP, top morning, man. Don't we love basketball? How good is NBL basketball?
The season has delivered the way through. I feel like most of the time that you and I have spoken, it's been just stuff that is really believable. The script's just been flipped in every single direction, and now we get to a couple of basically elimination games in the second round of the finals where our championship series will be decided over the course of 4 hours of back-to-back hoops. It's an extraordinary way to get to a decider.
I'm going to go to work. I'm going to quickly come home and have a quick power nap so I can stay up for the twilight game in Perth, which normally I have to watch it in two parts because I'm normally asleep by then. But, man, I can't wait. I'm just so anxious for these two games because we finally get a decider in both semifinal series, giving us three games, giving us just spoiling us rotten with great basketball. I don't know what to say except let's just get it on.
Absolutely. We'll hit Tassie Perth. We'll go in chronological order here. So people will be watching these games in this order. So this is how we'll get to it. As we go. So we'll start with Melbourne Illawarra, 7:30 Eastern Daylight Time, back at John Cain Arena. Series locked at 1-1. Two overtime games, so 115-106 in the first game. And then we went to overtime again. Melbourne United win the... Illawarra win the second one, 113-108. So we come back to Melbourne for game three in a series that's gone to two overtime so far. Surely we couldn't have that again, but this series has been... It's been wild swings in both of these games, to the Hawks, away from the Hawks. They had a bit of a gut check in game two, and they came through that. In a series in which probably a lot of people thought this might be a 2-0 sweep, the Hawkies have done themselves a lot of favors.
Okay. I don't know who could possibly predict back-to-back overtime games in a best-of-three series. There is absolutely no way on God's green earth that this game three is going to overtime. It just can't happen. So these two teams have both blown a game. Both of these teams already feel like this series should be over. Illawarra Hawks blew game one. We'll need to rehash that. And then Melbourne United get the Illawarra and can't make a free throw down the stretch, and they blow that game. Here we are. It's those intangibles, Joe, that I like. We all know about the players. Every coach got their defensive schemes, and everybody's tinkering here and there. But it is the intangibles that can get you through a series, through a semifinal series, to the championship series. And those intangibles cannot be found watching video. Those intangibles cannot be dissected in a coach's meeting room. The Illawarra Hawks, for mine, have those intangibles. That thing you just can't quite put your finger on, they have that X factor. It's camaraderie. It's never say die. It's never quit. It's the cardiac kids. Just when you think we're not supposed to be here, we show up and say, what the hell going on in here? You forgot about us. They got that about them the way they're playing. All led by Justin Tatum, the architect of this team. Who's going to play him in a sports documentary? I have no idea, but we got to find somebody 6'7". But what he's got this team doing is believing. Now, I'm saying, Joe, do the Melbourne United, yes, they have the talent. Yes, they have the home court advantage. But do they have that same belief that they can get it done like Illawarra do? We're going to find out, but I think Illawarra got the most.
Let's just stay on the Hawks while we're here. Has it surprised you the degree to which they have stood up in the postseason or been able to, given their lack of collective experience in this setting?
No, because, Joe, the belief, man. I'm telling you, belief cannot be, it can't be measured. Like, what's it look like? Like, how much is it? How much is too much? How much is not enough? Belief carries a team. It makes up for lack of shooting percentages. Belief makes up for turnovers. It makes up for so much. And unless you've been in a team that actually has that, you don't really grasp what I'm saying. I was lucky enough to be in a team that somehow found ways to win when we weren't supposed to. Melbourne United, they used to win it. They do it all the time. They haven't lost two games all season. They just walk around being the best dudes. Illawarra Hawks walk around believing they Lions. And I'm telling you, man, until you get yourself in that situation, a team like that, it's just hard to put it into words. So I feel like even though they don't have the experience, like I said, belief makes up for it.
Can that confidence and swagger that you mentioned there with Melbourne, can that play a role in this too, in a good way for them? The fact that they've got so many players who've won so much basketball and they've done it at various different levels. How much of a factor is that?
It's a factor. It is a factor because they're used to winning. But here's the thing. When used to winning faces the belief team, that used to winning team, Melbourne United, they got to get off to a good start. They got to jump and punch the Hawks in the face early, and they got a good. That game cannot get close. If that game is anywhere near tight, the belief gets bigger. They get used to these moments, and then all of a sudden, does Melbourne United get a little tight? They think, oh no, what are we doing here? Uh-oh, what's going to happen? All of a sudden, missed free throws, maybe a bad foul here or there, anything can happen. And I feel like the Hawks, like Justin Tatum said, we're playing with house money. We ain't supposed to be here. I'm telling you, man, if that game gets tight, it's definitely, definitely Hawks coming out with that win.
So game two, 74 points in the paint for the Hawks. Sam Frohling couldn't be stopped. They had their troubles with him in game one as well. They've got two of the best bigs in the competition in JLA and Nari Lukporti, and they've been able to do nothing about Sam Frohling so far. What's the recipe for Dean Vickerman?
Wow. He's going to have to speed up the tempo a little bit, I think. They're a methodical team, Melbourne United, and they like to strangle you to death on defense. Well, guess what? They've given up 100 points. I know both games went into overtime, but they have not been the defensive juggernaut that Dean Vickerman is used to having. And Dean said that they've had a nice little honesty session where guys, I'm sure, was challenged in a respectful, however they wanted to do it. Guys got challenged, and they got told, play some damn defense. They can't give up 100 points and win this series. So the Hawks, on the other hand, like, yes, Sam Frohling has been really, really good. Gary Clark cannot be guarded by not only anybody in the Melbourne United, he can't be guarded by anybody in Melbourne, Joe. That dude is 177 NBA game talent. He can score from every single level. They need to double him. Now, obviously, you start off the game playing straight up man-to-man. Luke Travers, great defender, but you're too light. You're way too light for Gary Clark. Gary Clark is way too experienced and good for Kyle Bowen. And then Huck Porty and JLA, it's a weird matchup. Like I said, they can't guard him. In game two, they started to double Gary Clark, get the ball out of his hands. And that's what they want to do, make other guys beat him.
So what's the path to victory for each of these two teams? Let's start with Melbourne United. How do they win it if they're going to?
Melbourne United, like I said, they got to get off to a good start offensively and let the Illawarra Hawks feel like, uh-oh, I guess maybe this is how the story ends. But like I said, they can't let it get close. So Melbourne United got to come out all guns blazing. I know Dean likes to go to his bench a lot and guys playing, you know, Bowen's getting minutes, Tanner Krebs getting minutes. I feel like in this game, you got to play these guys a la Bryce Cotton minutes. Chris Golding needs 35-plus minutes. Not winning overtime, in 35 regulation minutes. You got to go into absolute studs. I don't mind rotating the three guards. Ian Clark has been fantastic. We all know what Dudley's been doing with Shai Ili. That's fine. But I'm talking about Chris Golding. You cannot play Chris Golding anything less than 35 minutes, I feel, in this deciding game.
It's interesting. He has been one of the slow starters. They haven't necessarily looked for him early in the game. So his response in terms of that will be interesting. And if the Hawks are to cause one of the great upsets in recent NBL Finals history and get through this Game 3 and progress to a championship series, how do they do it?
The Hawks got to keep doing what they have been doing. They got to take care of the basketball. They got to go inside. They got to get Gary Clark, and they got to get Sam Frawley engaged early, which they've already been doing. They have a formula already. They figured it out a long time ago, the hierarchy, how this team works. Now they just have to make sure they do it under pressure. Now, when things get a little bit tight, sometimes the Hawks can be a little erratic. They can get a little turnover prone. Maryland United amped up the defense and amped up the physicality, and then next thing you know, the ball was flying all over the place. Tyler Harvey needs to be his not wild self, but he still needs to be aggressive in his spots when it's his time. Once that ball is moved around, get Tyler involved in those pick and rolls, because his floater game, he shot an unbelievable percentage from two the other day. They barely made any threes in game two and still got the win. So the Hawks, all they have to do is keep doing what they've been doing.
That's going to be such a tasty prospect. So 7:30 tomorrow night, game three is Melbourne and Illawarra at John Cain Arena. That leads us to Perth and Tassie. Game three over in the West. Tassie coming through with an 8-point win on Monday. Of course, these two teams have scored the exact same number of points through their first two games. They cannot be split in terms of point differential. Marcus Lee comes back for Tassie. How big could that inclusion be, Damon?
That's huge, because another rim protector. Marcus got a minimum 12 to 15 minutes of maybe 6 points, 6 to 7 rebounds, 2 block shots, possibly some chains and some shots, and just keeping the rotations, giving Will Magne his appropriate rest. So it's good to have him back, because he is their starting center. Even though Will Magne has been more impactful, Marcus is their starting center. But they also added the return of the Dane. Majuk Dane is back to his scoring best. Shades of cans, Majuk Dane. The guy can score. He's that extra guy. So now Scott Roth has a four-headed monster when you add Fabian Krstović in that mix as well.
I think most monsters do have four heads, but Scott Roth's got one with four heads. The Keanu Pinder piece of this is an interesting one. Olgun Ulic reporting on Overtime last night that he'd spoken to Keanu Pinder's agent, who said that he was experiencing some dizziness. Of course, we know that during that game too, he took a hit, looked like a bit of a whiplash scenario. He went down, he got back up, and then sort of stumbled back down and just took a couple of moments to regain his composure. He also took several knocks in game one, most notably Anthony Drimmick. There was a play with Marcus Lee when he got dunked on that he took some contact as well. According to Olgun, he was assessed after both of these games, and there is no indication that he will not play tonight in Perth, but he didn't look his absolute best in that game, and so there has to be a little bit of a question mark. Whether or not there's a question mark on whether he plays or not is which Keanu Pinder do we get? Do we get Keanu Pinder from game one shooting the lights out, or do we get something more like what we saw from the second half in game two, where he played limited minutes and was ineffectual when he was out there?
Okay, now this is wild right here. This is tricky, because are we saying that Keanu Pinder had a bad game too because he was suffering from concussion symptoms? Like, there has not been any mention of concussion symptoms. Okay, his agent says he was dizzy. His agent? His medical team didn't say it. John really didn't say it. Keanu didn't say it. So now he plays a very ordinary game. And yes, he went down. I was there. I saw it. No head contact, no hit to the head. Now, he started the third quarter, took 3 three-pointers, missed them all, the same exact threes that he made in game one. Now, let's go back to game one. When was he concussed when he was going off for 25 points? Like, I just don't know. Like, all we can do is speculate, and of course, player safety is paramount. And all we want is healthy players on the court battling it out. But I'm more hesitant to say to Keanu, because he has a certain kind of a face, a resting face, when he's on the bench. Like, how do you sit on the bench when you miss 3 threes in a row? How do you sit on the bench when you're in foul trouble? You're not going to sit on the bench and have the happy face. You're going to sit on the bench with the confused face. Like, what the hell is going on, face? Like, how come these refs just dogging me, face? Like, David, how come I can't make a shot face? That's the way I was kind of taking it. Whereas it seems like the narrative is he was suffering from some type of, like, dizziness. Okay. Was he? Don't know. His agent? I don't know. So, long as Keanu is out there on the court, he's not going to use anything as an excuse. John really said he just was out of rhythm. That's what his head coach said. So, at best, at least we can say he played himself into a funk. He couldn't make his shot, got himself in foul trouble. So he's got to step up in game three because Bryce will not be able to do it by himself.
Yeah, the stuff coming out of the club seems like nothing to see here. We expected he'll be himself in game three, but the eye test, it just doesn't stack up. There's something here in one way or another that just does not stack up. And you're right in saying that all we can do is speculate. We're clearly not medical professionals, and you know, our NBL clubs and the NBL itself has people who know how to handle these situations. But there is something here that doesn't stack up. It's going to be an intriguing part of tomorrow night. It's a big part of the story because he won game one for them, and now he could play any kind of role when we come to game three. Bryce Cotton, 2 points in that fourth quarter. As you said, you were there in that raucous arena down at MyState Bank. What did you make of Bryce's closing performance? Was it more about just a bit of an off-shooting night for him or some defensive stuff the Jackies did well?
It was the defense what the Jackies did. I thought Bryce was great. He played every minute of the game. He is so good that you obviously can't play him one-on-ones. Sean McDonald did an extremely good job of just being there. But then you got to have help. And there was plenty of times that Bryce either just could not get a catch because anytime he came off of anything that resembled a screen, they were switching. If he had the ball and came off the ball screen, they're doubling. And then they got a weak side guy clogging up the key. Bryce had the hardest 24 points I've ever seen him get. It's just too hard. He can't get enough shot attempts. So the Jackies have a great defensive scheme, basically saying, we don't trust your backup dancers. We don't trust your backup singers to make enough hits, to sing enough classic songs to get this team over the line. Because Bryce is clearly the best singer on the team. But Christian Doolittle, he had a couple of high notes. But then after that, there was nobody. Two guys in double figures. Nobody else anywhere near it is not going to be enough. And on the defensive end, now that you've got Majuk Dink scoring, Jack McVay just knows how to get 20 points. He's an accumulator. And then you got Milton Doyle. You're either going to get Milton Doyle or you're going to get Jordan Crawford. Damn it, you're getting one of them dudes. Both of them ain't going under 10 points. And then you add Shawnee Mack coming into the game. So the Jack Jumpers got five guys in double figures. Perth Wildcats, two guys. Do the math.
The Oscars have been this week. Is this more about best actor or best supporting cast for you? It sounds like it's more like a best supporting cast type setup. We're looking at cinematography. We're looking at costumes. We're looking at sets.
We're looking at soundtrack. We're looking at a whole bunch of stuff.
Yep.
It's the supporting cast. And the Jack Jumpers have four legitimate guys that could have been all NBL. Obviously Doyle, Crawford, McVay, Magnay. Then you add Majuk Dink. And then you add Shawnee Mack, Sean McDonald. I mean, so they got scoring is not an issue for those guys, whereas it's always been an issue with Perth. Yes, they did it in game one, and they held Tazzy to 81 points. Phenomenal defensive effort. All the moons got to align, and even that game went down kind of to the last few minutes before they stretched out a little bit. But guys was passive in the second half, and they were aggressive in the first half. They got to keep that same energy for the whole game.
Who wins and why?
Tasmania wins.
Okay. I
said it earlier, Tasmania wins this series because they are calloused. They are battle-hardened. They don't lay down. They got way more depth on the scoring department. And I feel like in their third year of existence, I feel like it's their time. Get back to the grand final. Now, if it's an all-regional grand final, anything can happen. But I feel like they get out of Perth. The road trip, the home court advantage doesn't quite have the same effect when both teams travel on the same day. So I feel like that's not even an advantage for Perth. And the Jackies have a formula for Bryce Cotton.
That's going to be, if they get it done in Perth, I mean, finals in your first season is something. Going over to Perth and winning a game three is something else entirely, potentially, for the Jack Jumpers and the Wildcats. They'll be ready to go. The Red Army will be out in force tomorrow night. It's been a long episode. It's been a great chat. One more before we let you go. I can't finish the pod without saying a farewell to one of the men of the Little Big Men Society in Parker Jackson Cartwright. He signed a 1.5 year deal. A 1.5 year deal with Galatasaray in the Turkish league. So he's balled out in the NBL. And as Leonard Copeland would say, he's got that bag. And Parker Jackson Cartwright is off to greener pastures.
Yeah, crushing blow to the Little Big Man Society. There goes my vice president. If he was 6'2", they would have gave him a full 2 year deal, but only 1.5. Look, he was great. The league was better when he was in it. Wish him all the best. PJC was phenomenal, and hopefully he can be replaced by another Little Big Man. I'm opening up the applications, Joel. I'm taking applications for the Little Big Man Society.
Have you set a date for the AGM of the society? You're going to have to go through board nomination process, all that kind of governance stuff with the society. What's next for the society? That's the real question of the offseason, Dan.
Yeah, we're going to have a little powwow, get together, pour out a drink for the Little Big Man, and move on.
Yep, you don't need a full-scale review, Southeast Melbourne Phoenix style. You just need a couple of tweaks, and you'll be back reloading and ready to roll next season. I like the look of that, Damon. Great talking hoops with you, as always. So much to get through. I feel like we could have talked for an hour. We did a third of it, so hopefully people have got this far with us. Of course, 7:30 tonight, Eastern Daylight Time, Melbourne and Illawarra, Perth and Tassie following that. It's just going to be an extraordinary night of hoops.
Rest up.
Absolutely. Get that power nap in. Damon Lowry, NBL champion, with you. Thanks for your company. All the hoops action coming up tonight. And, of course, we'll be back in your feed tomorrow morning to wrap it all up.